A draw with Costa Rica, positives and negatives for Irish manager Martin O'Neill, but now Portugal on the horizon, and we'll see how the boys in green can do. Portugal's last game before the World Cup finals. This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. You can contact the show by tweeting at FRQFM and check out Freak FM on Facebook. Coming up, I'll be talking to Stephen Finn, communications executive for the FAI, all about futsal, a terrific style of indoor soccer which seems to be growing and growing all the time in Ireland. We'll also have some fierce debate all about the Irish team, looking back at the Costa Rica game, looking ahead to the Portugal game, and looking at those FIFA rankings that seems Ireland dropped to 70th place, the lowest place since we've been in the world rankings. But first, Croatia beckon for the girls in green on Saturday in Talas Stadium. I'm delighted to be joined by Irish soccer sensation Áine O'Gorman. Áine, thanks for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. What's the mood like in the camp? Are you guys no doubt looking forward to it?
Yeah, definitely. We're obviously looking to regroup after the Russia match last week and coming so close to beating Germany. So we're looking to get another 3 points on the board. So
yeah, hopefully it will be 3 points, Áine. I know that you had a tough time late last year when you took on Croatia. They might have been the lesser team, as we would have thought, you know, at the start of the campaign, but no doubt they made life difficult for us. And when we were over there, I think there was a late equaliser that we got a draw. They're not playing like a bottom-seeded team.
No, Croatia, they're quite good, and they're going to put a lot of pressure on us on the ball, and they'll close us down, so they'll try and make it hard for us today, but we go out and do what we can do, like, there's no reason why we shouldn't get the 3 points.
I suppose the mentality among the girls, Áine, kind of changes between the type of games that we've played, because, you know, when we were up against Germany, it was really bonus territory that we played so well, because they really are, Germany are really an unstoppable force, there's no doubt about that, but to give them quite a scare and almost win the game, it was really remarkable. And then Russia going in with so much confidence as well, but we know how good they are and it didn't quite come off. How does that mentality change, though, going up at home against a team that we, you know, we'd be initially expected to win against?
I just think we need to remember how well we played against Germany and regroup after the Russia match and just go out and play confident and the way we can, and then there's no reason why we shouldn't. I know we've all looked, probably everyone individually looked at the game and as a group, and we all know where we went wrong, and we just need to rectify them mistakes now and then just push on forward.
And one of the major positives from this campaign, Áine, has been the crowd at Talas Stadium. It's been really excellent recently. Expecting a good turnout this time round.
Yeah, like hopefully everyone can get out and support us as well, because it does really make a difference in the pitch when you're on the pitch, like against Germany, when you hear the crowd roar, and it just gives you that extra boost. And hopefully they'll come out and support us against Croatia, and we can go out and do the business and put on a good display.
Yeah, we had Sue on the show there about a month ago, and I put it to her about, we had a lot of the senior men's players and how social media and that, and all the guys, the likes of David Myler and that, they were tweeting out and taking photos in support of the girls. How great is that for you guys to know that it's getting the whole everybody around?
Yeah, it's great for us to know that the boys are behind us, and obviously it creates more awareness, like that them tweeting and stuff just makes more people aware and gives us good press coverage. And then the game, I think we are getting more coverage now as it goes on, and people are starting to show more interest, like, which is great for even young girls coming through and the support of our team. It does give us a little boost.
Yeah, you yourself now, Áine, you've had a remarkable career, and to be still at such a young age, you must be so delighted with how things have panned out. You've played well over 50 times for Ireland. Did you believe this?
Yeah, I've 65 caps now, yeah.
Not bad at all.
I'm like one of the L ones.
Did you ever believe that things would work out so well when you were a younger player?
Obviously when you're younger and you're going out playing and you're starting to represent Leinster and playing in the kind of local tournament stuff, all you ever want to do is put on that green jersey and play for Ireland. So obviously it's a great honour to do that, and obviously things have moved forward, and obviously I started playing very young, but hopefully it'll go a few more years ahead.
And it's been remarkable. I mean, you got to enjoy, you know, you've seen P-Mount in Champions League action and that. I mean, seem to be coming through, Áine, at the perfect time for women's football here in Ireland, because there's been feats that we haven't seen before, and that must be great for not just yourself, but all the girls that are with you there at P-Mount and indeed Ireland.
Yeah, 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 no, this is great for the coverage of the women's game. And obviously, our under-19s recently qualified for the first time for the European finals, which are going to be in July. So that's like another huge step forward as well. So hopefully, when them players start coming through into our team as well, we can keep building and moving forward.
You were in Doncaster for a bit. You played for the Doncaster Rovers Bells, which was a very well-earned move, and you got a good few appearances there. What was it like moving abroad? Did you find it difficult? I know a lot of young Irish people, they do tend to have a bit of a difficult time, but how was it for you? Was it a great experience, a different type of football, no doubt?
Yeah, I enjoyed the experience, and obviously, like, we were playing in the top league in England, and it was... It was a great learning curve for me, but obviously I spent 2 years there, and I don't regret it for 1 minute. And obviously it probably helped me develop a little bit of footballers now. But now I'm back home, and the league at home is a good standard in moving forward as well. So I'm happier here with my friends and family. So.
Indeed, onwards and upwards, as they say. I have to ask you, I know you have a little bit of a GAA background. You were involved, I think you played for Bray, and you were involved in some nice scalps there as well. What was it like making the transformation? Do you feel your GAA background kind of helped you push on through soccer? Of course, there was the competitiveness that might have come from GAA would have given you that extra boost.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think, like, obviously women's football is very, very competitive throughout the whole country, And I've started playing, I would have been playing senior women's football when I was a young age as well, like in soccer. So, like, I think maybe it does just give you a little bit more of an edge and a bit of a bite. So, yeah, probably does help me a bit on the football pitch. Obviously, now I don't have really time. I've committed to football, so I don't have time to play, even though all my buddies would still play Gaelic. But I'd like to get back playing sometimes, but... Time doesn't always allow, does it?
No, definitely not. But fair play to you for getting in there and, you know, mixing it about. It proves that you're a real athlete, as they say. Before I let you go, what would be the plans for the future, Anya? Are you just enjoying the soccer as it is at the moment? Would you ever plan another move away? You're in a really good place now, as you said. You're at home with your friends and your family. You're playing for Ireland all the time. What would be the plans?
I don't know. I think at the moment I'm just happy. Like, I'm working in the gym and I'm doing personal training and stuff, and I really enjoy it, and that's what I love doing. So at the moment I'm just quite happy and settled at home with my friends and family. Like I say, and the football's good and I'm enjoying playing for Ireland. So I don't have no future plans to go elsewhere. Babies.
I wish you the absolute best of luck this week going up against Croatia. I know it's going to be a tough match, but no doubt you girls are going to be well prepared for it. And I think the whole of Ireland is rooting for you guys. Thanks a million, Anya, for coming on the show. And I hope to chat to you again very, very soon.
Okay, cool. Thanks very much.
Turn it up.
Go! Freak FM is brought to you by AIB,
the future project.
Tweet us your request and your song could be next.
Whatever the future brings.
Bring it on.
With the World Cup underway this week, we're going to see a huge mix of different football styles and tactics. Sadly, Ireland aren't there, but no doubt there's going to be a lot of technical ability on show. I'm delighted to be joined by Stephen Finn, Communications Executive for the FAI, but also Director of Futsal Ireland. Stephen, thanks a million for joining us. For some of our listeners who may not know, can you tell us exactly what futsal is?
Okay, well, futsal is a word that was sort of created about 20 years ago. It's not quite an acronym, but it's basically an amalgamation of the various different ways people say indoor soccer, whether it's in Portuguese, which would be football de salon, or in Spanish, would be football sala, the FUT being the football part and the SAL being sala or room or indoors as we know it. So specifically, it's an indoor game. It's five-a-side with free-flowing subs. It's professional in a lot of countries. It's grown to have a massive, massive influence on the development of Brazilian football and Spanish football in particular, where most children would get their first sort of exposure to football through futsal, whether it's in the school hall or in sort of countries with better climate than us in the pitch, which kind of looks like an Olympic handball pitch, which would be in their schoolyard. And then you would have a lot of clubs use that then as a sort of a breeding ground for the players which would go into their youngest academy teams. The key element of the game in comparison to, say, indoor football that people would have played in Ireland over the years is their sideline, so you can't kick the ball against the wall. And the ball itself has two bladders in it which counteract against each other, so that, in essence, deadens the ball. So it means it has a less of a bounce, which, especially for kids, it means it's got a much more predictable roll and a much more predictable bounce, so it's easier for kids to control. So there's loads of intricate rules and regulations, but I won't really go into them. But ultimately, you can say it's a game played in very short spaces, which promotes skill and passing and dribbling.
That's one of the key things that I think has made it so successful, Stephen. The fact, as you said, it's primarily played indoors, but it uses the football with the restricted bounce and, you know, sidelines that, as you'd have, say, in basketball or handball, as you were saying, so you wouldn't be able to kind of kick it against the wall. This, no doubt, allows for the kids particularly to get more feel of the ball, develop personal skills. But as you said, the focus mainly is on using your head, quick thinking and being creative. And that's probably evidence as why we've seen such skillful players in the likes of Brazil and Spain in recent times.
Absolutely. It was very interesting. Last year, I had the good fortune to travel to a UEFA conference on futsal with my colleague Derek O'Neill and Greg Patterson, who was the head of the coach education unit within the FAI. You know, Greg had heard a little bit about futsal, but he didn't know as much as Derek or I, who have been involved in futsal since 99, basically. Anyway, Greg's first view of futsal was over the course of the tournament and of the course. The UEFA were putting together a structure for a proposed UEFA B licence for coaching futsal. And what really struck with him afterwards was he said that futsal gives you the situation where you can create many, many decision-making situations. So kids get more touches of the ball. They're in more restricted areas. They've got to decide, do I dribble? Do I pass? Do I move off the ball? You know, all of the elements that we would associate with being good football players, but basically in sort of a micro area, and that's where we've really seen kids in other countries who would have grown up playing futsal go out onto a football pitch, and it seems like a giant space. You know, when a guy is being pressed in football, he may have a guy 5 or more yards away from him. In futsal, a futsal player would think, well, I've got lots of space here. So you definitely see guys who've grown up with futsal just being so comfortable on the ball because they never feel like they're under pressure.
Yeah, what struck an idea with me there was the fact you mentioned how it's enabling the kids to make decisions. Do they run? Do they pass? Do they tread back? They make the decisions themselves. You know, they're using their own natural creative instinct, as you said. And it's quite a contrast to the what you'd consider a lot of, say, juvenile football in Ireland over the past few years, of having the parents and the coaches shouting at the kids from the sidelines, telling them what to do. Quite different, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I suppose because you've got less players, the ball circulates around the team a lot quicker. Kids generally get far more touches, and probably on a slightly bigger pitch, whether 7-a-side or 9-a-side, you know, the ball moves a bit slower, so people who think they're Mourinho is dealing with kids in the park are screaming all these instructions and almost trying to dictate the game for the kids. Whereas in a futsal environment, because it's quicker and smaller spaces, by the time they've completed the sentence, the ball's probably already gone. And a big advantage as well is that you would have in a lot of situations, the parents will be up in sort of on the balcony overlooking the game, and the kids having a clue what's going on in terms of parents shouting, so they just play the game themselves. So I feel a futsal in the current environment, when, you know, when I was growing up, we used to play football on the green or football on the street. That's gone now, and I think futsal is the best opportunity we have to try and recreate that street football vibe, to allow kids to play without feeling that they need to check with their mum or dad all the time, are they doing the right thing?
Indeed, yeah. Another thing that you touched on, Stephen, you've been kind of in, you said you were involved in futsal since 1999, and, you know, it's quite a while, but from an Irish point of view, were you a little bit surprised that it never really took off before that here in Ireland? Why do you think it's taken so long, and great work that yourself and a lot of other people are now finally putting in? Why do you think it's been so long before we've actually seen it develop? Has there just been maybe a mentality among football in Ireland throughout the years?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why something which is new. I think Irish people don't like new things. They don't like to try things that they didn't grow up with themselves. So not every person who looks after a team has the open mind to go and see what others are doing. I'm not saying I'm better than anyone else, but basically I saw futsal on TV, the European Championships, in, I think it was 98, and I said to myself, well, we have to play this in Ireland. And in around the same time, I'd met Derek O'Neill, who wasn't working for the FAI at that time, and he had set up a football salon academy in Dublin. And once, like, Derek and I knew each other quite well, and once we sat down and talked, we realised we were actually talking about the same thing. And we put a lot of effort into trying to grow futsal. And there are little pockets around the country where people are playing it and getting fantastic rewards. There's a man down in Westport who introduced futsal into a little parish hall in Westport about 6 years ago. And he has kids playing from 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday to 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, he's now seeing those kids that he started off with are winning cups and stuff with their school teams and whatever that they never did before. And, you know, they probably, people are saying there, it's probably linked to the fact that the kids are getting to play futsal when they're small. So, you know, I could mention other stories similarly around the country, but ultimately I think the biggest problem with introducing anything new in Ireland is resources. We have very, very poor facilities in Ireland. I don't mind saying it, but the reality is that, you know, any Eastern European country that you care to think of has far better indoor facilities than we have. And it frustrates me that around the country, I see new halls opened up and I walk in the door and they've got simply basketball sized courts and they've got no spectator facilities. And it frustrates me because it's not allowing, you know, people watch their kids or watch their friends or whatever in the comfortable environment play their sport. And, you know, I would love to sit down with people who are designing halls or looking at bringing halls into areas and say, like, don't just focus on the little playing area, think about what else you have on offer, you know. And there's loads of mini influences on which has held futsal back, but, you know, it takes people just to say, well, I'll do it, roll the sleeves up and get out there. You know, there's a lot of people who would have grown up in futsal environments living in Ireland now, whether it's Brazilians, Spanish, Eastern Europeans, other South American countries. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to go and meet these people and get them into our football culture.
Yeah, it made me think back to, I remember years ago when there was the Samba Soccer documentaries and they took a team from Athlone over to Brazil and they were playing against all different local teams and that. And there was one thing that was really interesting. They played in one of these indoor halls and they actually had good facilities for the spectators. And I know a lot of the Irish kids were saying afterwards how, wow, they had never experienced a noise and atmosphere like that, you know, of people in there shouting, enjoying themselves, and they really, really enjoyed it. And as you said, that's a key point there with the indoor facilities. I'd imagine weather conditions doesn't help us for normal soccer, you know, games. It's not really ideal. A lot of local teams kind of dread winter training because it's more about the fitness and very little skills are worked on. So this is kind of, futsal is kind of bridging that gap.
Absolutely. Well, interestingly, in Athlone, they've been running a tournament every winter for several years now, a futsal tournament in the Athlone IT, and they make a fantastic event. The Gordon Brett is the head of sport in Athlone IT, works with Paul Quinn and the other people within the Athlone District Schoolboy League. And, like, it's well worth watching. They stream it online. They have a DJ playing music, and the kids feel like they're superstars. And, you know, it's just, it's brilliant to see kids have such fun playing futsal. And, you know, as you just mentioned there, they know their games are going to go ahead. Their games aren't called off because of the weather. Like, if I take my own son, it's so frustrating for him. Like, he played a league game December 8th, and his next league game was the first week in April. And week after week after week, fixture would be in the paper, he'd be looking forward to his match, and then on Friday the text arrives, pitch off. You know, I just don't understand why in Ireland people try and essentially do the opposite to logic. You know, our heaviest rainfall is December, January, February. So why are we playing outdoors at this time when we could easily be playing indoors?
Yeah, it seems absolutely ludicrous indeed. I'd be 100% agreeing with you there, Stephen. At Futsal Ireland, you guys administrate leagues and tournaments for the FAI and you run your own academy and events, as you were saying, for kids and adults. How successful have you guys been? Do you find a huge rise over the recent years now? The fact that the kids these days can be watching the likes of Xavi and Iniesta from Barcelona play this type of football, I think it's really kind of caught on, and no doubt you've seen more and more people looking to get involved and they actually want to play this brand of football.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a slow growth because obviously you're dealing with competing for space and halls, and you're trying to get into areas where people are going to give it a go. But certainly anyone who plays it really enjoys it, you know. And when you talk about Xavi and Iniesta, like there was a famous ad Nike did with Iniesta, who spoke about playing futsal when he was as a youngster. And people probably don't even realise, but Carles Puyol, the famous warrior Barcelona defender, he never even played an 11-a-side game until he was 40.
I heard that as well. Unbelievable.
He was being playing futsal by Barcelona, and they brought him to the club initially as a winger, and he developed into a fantastic defender. But like over the years, like, and if people care to go onto YouTube and Google, just type in Felipe Coutinho futsal, type in Neymar futsal, Ronaldinho futsal, the original Ronaldo futsal, Robinho futsal. Oscar, the Chelsea player, recently did an interview with the Mail where he said that he played futsal all the way up to the age of 16. You know, this is just a natural part of the development of players in these countries. Yeah, we see that it works elsewhere, yet we seem to be afraid to try and implement something that's working elsewhere. You know, I don't really get it, but hopefully I can help spread the message. And thanks to yourself for interviewing me and helping me spread the message. And if people want to go check out futsalireland.ie, I'll try and give them as much help as I can. I'd like to encourage people to sort of go on the internet, check out YouTube, learn as much as they can about it, and, you know, get the kids playing in their areas. There's people all over the country who are starting to embrace it. And if we can bring all those people together and give the kids the opportunity to play, then the kids are going to benefit.
Yeah, exactly. And what you were saying about Xavi, Iniesta, Ronaldinho, Ronaldo and Carles Puyol, as you said, didn't play 11-a-side until 14 years of age, which was really remarkable. I suppose, finally, before I let you go, from an Irish point of view, the closest we have, I suppose, to a Xavi or Iniesta is the likes of Wes Hoolihan. And it's a little bit disappointing that it's not until now that we're kind of bearing, you know, seeing how much of a great player he really is. And does it suggest, Stephen, that we're still quite a bit behind the rest of the world in this regard? Because over the years, there's been an emphasis on size, speed and strength, and the type of players that have made it getting picked up by English clubs have been of that nature rather than the Wes Hoolihans of Ireland.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Wes. Wes played in the very first Irish squad that we ever put together. He was playing for Belvedere at schoolboy level at the time when we played the Scotland team, and he was just unbelievable. I always knew he was amazing. So I was thrilled when Martin O'Neill really seemed to embrace him and is building a team around him. You know, Wes probably would have got 100 caps in another era, but he's been given a late opportunity. It's interesting, actually. Other guys in the Irish squad who played futsal include Seamus Coleman, James McLean, and David Moyler. They all played futsal in the FAI Futsal Cup with their clubs in 2007 when we ran the FAI Futsal Cup. So, you know, Seamus Coleman would be another player that would personify what we would associate with a futsal player. Quick feet, imagination, enthusiasm, great movement, you know, it's no mistake that players like this are coming through. And you're right, maybe 20 years ago, Seamus Coleman wouldn't have been signed by an English club because he would have said he's not tall enough. But I think the rise of Spain in particular and Barcelona has shown people that if you've got the ball, it doesn't matter what height you are. And that's the mentality that I would like people to try and embrace. And I think a futsal culture is replicated in a football environment because, you know, just an example, some of the Spanish guys that have played with me, I've sort of organised for them to play football with, say, Leinster Senior League teams or whatever, and I'd ask them, well, what did you think? And they'd go, well, I can't understand it. I pass to a guy and then he kicks it down into the corner flag. And I'm going, well, I'm standing right beside you. What are you kicking the ball away for? And I think, I'm not criticising the Leinster Senior League, it's just an example. But ultimately, other cultures think when your team has the ball, they rotate it and keep the possession until they create an opportunity. Whereas in Ireland, our mentality has been, we have the ball, let's get it into their box as quickly as possible. So that takes a while to change. And hopefully the Wes Houlihan's and the Seamus Coleman's will inspire other people to maybe consider different ways of playing the game.
Fingers crossed, hear, hear to that, Stephen. Thanks a million for joining us. Just quickly, for people looking to get involved and find out more about Futsal Ireland, it's best go to futsalireland.ie?
Correct.
Fantastic stuff. Listen, Stephen, thanks a million for joining us and we'll hope to do it again very, very soon.
Absolutely, no problem. Thank you, Dave.
Get with the times. We're online and we're in your pocket. Just search for frq.fm and boom! There we are. Simple.
And to crank things up on the Why Big Football Show, I'm delighted to be joined by Neil McDonough, Near FM, Pete Kelly of ExtraTime.ie, and Pierce Corcoran of the Irish Sun. Lads, you're all very, very welcome. I know we're going to be looking back at the Costa Rica game shortly on the show, but Pierce, to come to yourself first, there was one of the major talking points among Irish soccer fans this week was the new FIFA World Rankings that are out, placing the Republic of Ireland in a low position of 70th. The worst we've ever been since the FIFA World Rankings were introduced. What did you make of it? Are we really that bad, or do you think these rankings are flawed, firstly?
They're flawed to an extent, but I think on the back of the results we've had recently, unfortunately, I don't think these rankings are they're flawed in so far that they don't take into account performances. That Poland, for instance, who was set on 69th, if they were to play a lowly team, or if they were to play a team, just for argument's sake, like a Northern Ireland, for instance, and beat them, then they'd obviously gain more points. But for us to go and play a Costa Rica with a depleted side, not do that badly, or go and play an Italy side, not do that badly, or so on and so forth, or play a side like Turkey, who for long periods of the game we did very well. It's just, it's our weaknesses at the back, which I think Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane will want to work on. And I think what they're trying to do lately is try and expose those weaknesses so they know exactly on how to fix them. So, and so far as how the team is performing, the rankings are flawed. But unfortunately, because of the results, or the lack thereof, the results that we're getting, it's probably near enough about right where we are at the moment.
Pierce, this goes back to rows that I've had on this show over the past 2 years, where I've made the point that Ireland haven't beaten a top-seeded team in a competitive game, we'll say, since we beat the Dutch in 2001. I was corrected because we did beat Slovakia in the qualifiers for Euro 2008, understand. They were ranked higher than us at that stage. But other than that, there hasn't been, we seem to struggle against any team that has a bit about them. That would reflect in our 70th position in the world rankings.
Well, yeah, you've got it spot on there. Like, Ireland don't have a glorious history of winning, particularly in recent times. I don't mean to disrespect the teams in the 90s or the noughties, but in recent times, our biggest, our best results have always been draws. And that's, I think, been the era that we had under Giovanni Trapattoni, where we had a very limited team between probably 08, kind of up until now, when where he getting draws against big sides like France, like Italy and whoever else, that was deemed a success. We picked up the wins against the lowly ones, and even at times we struggled to pick up the wins against lowly teams like your Faroe Islands or whoever else. So it isn't, I don't think I don't think it's a bad mark against a team either. And I couldn't imagine Martin O'Neill sitting down and thinking, Jesus, so where this is the depths of despair, because we're 70th, we're very low. So I think it's a point where I think he knows now where exactly his team is at and what exactly he has to do to try and pick them up again.
Neil McDonough, to come to you on this, we're down by the likes of Jordan, Libya. Libya, in fact, a team that Ayman Zayed, I think, is trying to get involved with because he never felt he'd be good enough for Ireland. And they're up in a nice 64th position. As Pierce mentioned, you know, it doesn't go on performance. And, you know, Poland are only 1 point ahead of us. So to have European teams like that far down, does it say something about the rankings that maybe, just maybe, they're not that accurate?
Well, the thing is, whether they're flawed or not, they're used by FIFA and they're going to be used in 12 months' time to decide what seed we're going to be. And at the moment, according to my calculations, I think we're down as a fourth seed if the current FIFA rankings for the World Cup qualifiers.
That would be a huge blow to us, Neil.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that we'll go up any higher, and we could be a fifth seed. So, and we've seen Scotland over the last few years, once you drop down the rankings, or Northern Ireland or Wales, even if you have a good group of players coming through like Wales do, you struggle to get up because you're in a group with Serbia, Croatia, Scotland and Belgium like they were the last time. So whether we may agree or disagree about the rankings, FIFA used them and they're used as the seeding process or the selection for World Cup qualification. So I do think we need to start taking friendlies a lot more seriously than we do at the moment. And that goes to show, or it shows the other night, that the penalty missed by Robbie Keane was actually an important penalty because we were playing a team that I think are in the 20s somewhere and we're 70th. So beating Costa Rica would have been a massive boost for our rankings. So I think that was it was a chance missed. And I'm not so sure whether Martin O'Neill realises, because he's new to international football, realises the importance of the rankings.
It's a huge ask though, Neil, in the sense that from an FAI point of view, when they sit down to see who they can get friendlies with, no doubt they want to get the glamour friendlies. You know, we have the likes of England and that coming to the Aviva Stadium next year or that. And you know, they want to be able to have matches, competitive games that's going to put bums on the seats, as they say. Should we really go down the route of just picking teams, that lesser teams that are above us in the rankings, that we think, okay, well, we can stuff these and fire ourselves, shoot ourselves high in the table?
Well, Switzerland seem to have chosen friendlies on the basis of games that would suit them, suit their rankings, and they have also not chosen friendlies. Sometimes not playing a match is better for your rankings than playing a game. And this is proven in the seedings for the World Cup. I think England played two more friendly games than Switzerland did. And as a result, they weren't the first seed, whereas Switzerland were the first seed going into the World Cup now that's coming up in Brazil. So the rankings are flawed and they're a complicated system. But so you do need somebody inside the FAI who can calculate what's the perfect games to be playing or sometimes not playing, and mix that also in with the footballing requests or the footballing desires of the manager. And I do think the Costa Rica game was a missed chance because they're no great shakes, but they are about 40 positions ahead of us in the rankings, and we could have beaten them the other night, especially when they were down to 10 men, and we didn't, and I think it was a chance missed.
Yeah, okay, a chance missed. Pierce Corcoran, just before I let you go, because I know you have to dash off, where would you stand on this argument about getting the competition versus the rankings, and where we, from Martin O'Neill's point of view, and from any manager's point of view, in fact, they're only going to have the players for a certain amount of time, and they want to get the best out of it. They're hardly going to be thinking, oh, I want to leave the team in a great shape for future tournaments 4, 6, 8 years down the line. They're hardly going to be feeling like that. Where would you stand in on this? Would you think we're going about it the right way by playing teams that are quite competitive, the Italy's, Portugal's, Costa Ricans, or do you think we should be more tactical in our selection and maybe do what Switzerland do, as Neil says, and don't play?
I probably would go down the route of what Switzerland do, because the one thing I've always thought about friendlies, especially international friendlies, is that they're flawed in the timing of the calendar when it comes to nations that are a little bit smaller or a little bit weaker than your bigger ones. And someone like Ireland, we saw against Turkey, and we've seen a couple of times actually, when Robbie Keane isn't there, or if he's unavailable because he plays across over in America, or if he's injured or whatever, we don't have that much quality up front. And I know we have Shane Long, who is a top striker in the Premiership, but he's not he's not going to be a fella that's going to be a top goal scorer at international level. And it goes right across the team that if we have injuries to one of our best centre backs, we don't have a huge amount of quality to step up and step into that position. So I would probably go down that route in terms of playing less friendlies to suit our resources and therefore see if we can kind of increase our position. But also, I think Martin O'Neill was in the unfortunate position that he needed to get a feel of what the kind of players he had. Like, 3 or 4 years down the line, I think Martin O'Neill would be in a better position to say, okay, let's hold off these end-of-season friendlies. Let's just take a break from it and stay where we are because we're settled there now. But he, like, I was talking to John Delaney, and John Delaney was talking about how Ireland were in a kind of unfortunate position in terms of attracting big name internationals to Aviva on the back of the last big one that they had, I think, was Germany or Sweden, and the next one is going to be Poland. And there's about a year and a half gap of really top quality opposition in a competitive fixture that Martin O'Neill can go and see the likes of Wes Hoolan, who hasn't been getting a huge amount of game time in the Premiership, and go, right, can you do it? Can you and Shane Long create that partnership? Because getting you in training, that's all well and good, but I need to see you out in the field. And that's probably to Ireland's detriment a little bit in recent times with the rankings.
It sure is. Piers Corcoran, I know you have to go. Thanks for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. We hope to chat to you soon. I want to talk to Pete Kelly here now. And Pete, just to bring you in on this, we talking about these friendlies now, and I was looking at some of the results. Some of the results are remarkable. I mean, I've seen Italy being held nil all by Luxembourg and that, and you know, if you're talking about friendlies, Brian Kerr as manager of Ireland really got the most out of friendlies. We beat the likes of Turkey and Portugal and all those type of teams, and we really shot up. However, what way do you stand on this? Is it almost like a lose-lose situation?
Well, I think it's your classic catch-22. I mean, I agree with a lot of what both Neil and Pierce said, but particularly maybe what Pierce just said there a couple of seconds ago, in that the new manager has just come in. I would want to see the players getting properly tested, that so that he gets an idea of what he can expect from them. And that's why he wanted these. He requested these extra friendlies. I think there were only going to be two originally, so he could kind of create the almost like the club scene over a number of weeks and learn a bit here and there about the guys, because they've got a tough qualifiers coming up. I think that if we can get through the qualifiers, if we can qualify for the next championship, then after that, it won't be so difficult. We'll shoot up the rankings. When we, you know, qualify for a couple of World Cups on the spin, you know, in the European Championships, 88, you know, 1994, the rankings look after themselves because we qualified. And I don't know actually if the rankings were as complicated in those days. I was looking at the rankings here, and so I think they're a bit flawed, but there has to be some methodology or somebody will complain about it. But if you look to the top 30 there, you know, we played Costa Rica, we probably should have beaten them there and there at 28. Algeria at 22, we'd expect to be beating them every day of the week. Now, whether we would do that or not, in the flesh, remains to be seen. But there's plenty of them. The USA are in at 13. Now, nobody will convince me that the Americans are in the top 20 in the world when you have the likes of the Greeks and the Croats and the Russians well below them.
It's a fair point.
You know, it's like a swings and roundabouts, there's troughs and peaks that it changes. Maybe it's not the best system we have, but it's the system we have. And as Neil was saying, FIFA are going to use it, so we'll have to do something about it. But I think maybe O'Neill's attitude will change once we get underway for the Europeans, get a couple of wins under our belt. Maybe that might make a big difference.
What about the point, Pete, that, you know, during the qualifiers for the Euros, when we qualified for Euro 2012, we got Estonia because we were very lucky to get into those seeded playoff positions, which was, I don't know how we did it, but it was remarkable. And maybe the Carling Nations Cup, that friendly little tournament that we won, that kind of boosted us up a little bit and you know, helped us along the way. We also had played friendlies against Paraguay and Algeria, which we had won in the RDS, and they kind of boosted us up. And all those little things, played its part in us getting Estonia in the playoffs, which we eventually qualified, because I know a lot of Irish fans will tell you, Pete, they're not too sure if Ireland would have qualified had we gotten some of the other teams in that playoff system. So maybe, just maybe, we should be more, we should treat these more importantly. But again, from a manager's point of view, they only have the team for a certain amount of time. They want to see them against Champions League opposition. For example, that Serbian team, a lot of them players are playing regularly in the Champions League, and same with Turkey and that. So they want to be able to see us up against the tough teams. I mean, what do we do? Are they going? Do you think Martin O'Neill is going about it the right way?
I think currently he is, because he's got to, you know, he wants to, you know, we've got to hit into, we're playing Georgia, I think it's in September, and then we have the home game against Gibraltar. I think we have a game against Oman in the meantime, which will be sort of, that won't do our rankings any good or any badness. You know, it would be one way or the other, it won't matter. But we, you know, he needs to know coming out after we play the Portuguese. I think he would have a really good idea, if everybody's available, you know, what his starting 11 or 12 are, you know, give or take one or two players. And with the initial games coming up September-ish time, there wasn't too many games for the lads to get injured. And hopefully the solid, experienced internationals that he has, you know, will do well for him in those. And experienced internationals, you know, they're worth their weight in gold. And as long as they're, you know, if they're fit enough, they're young enough, and, you know, if they're fit enough, they're old enough, it'd be the other end of the stick. But, you know, the likes of Dunn and Keane and those guys, and hopefully Dunn will be fit. We absolutely need those guys.
We do indeed. I don't think anybody will disagree with you there, Pete. Neil, to come back to you, and looking back at the Costa Rica game, a very good exercise for Martin O'Neill's men. We got to play in a bit of heat, and the team acquitted themselves quite well. A lot of positives. Kevin Doyle reminded us that he can still score goals, and an excellent header. There's no doubt about that. I thought Mark Wilson was excellent up until his injury. On the negative side, Costa Rica were down to 10 men, but it seemed to spur them on, and they gave us a real challenge. A bit sloppy by David Ford to give away the penalty. What did you make of the game?
I wouldn't be as positive as you were, Dave. Glenn Whelan and Paul Green as a selection in midfield, I thought was a retrograde step. I'm not sure what Martin O'Neill was thinking when he put the two lads out.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair on the two of them to put them out because they're so similar. I think if you stuck a midfield out of two Wes Hoolahans, I think they'd probably get overrun. So when you stick a midfield out of basically two players who are stoppers but don't create, you're going to get that. You're just going to get no creation. I thought James McLean got destroyed in the second half time and time again. The lad from who was at Arsenal, it was a Campbell, I think, absolutely destroyed him. We basically found out that James McLean can't cover a left back, or he can't that night. I thought Duffy was a positive. I thought he looked good, he looked assured. So I thought that was a positive out of it. Obviously, it's good to see Kevin Doyle get on the mark, and he led the line well. I do think there's been a chance missed here. I don't think we've seen Robbie Keane, Wes Hoolan and Shane Long on the pitch together at any time. And I think that's an opportunity that needs to be explored, and I'd like to see it explored against Portugal, either in a 3-5-2 or in a 4-3-3 with Shane Long out in the wing. So all in all, I didn't think it was positive, and I do come back at it again. It was a chance to win the match, and we should have won the game, even though we were at times hanging on in the second half. But against 10 men, if you can't beat a team of like Costa Rica, it doesn't say much for us. And I do think. I'm not sure exactly where Martin O'Neill is going with the squad at the moment. I'm not sure his plan. I'm sure he's checking out things. I'm sure he's ruling things off, crossing ideas off. One of them is probably McLean playing left back. but I'm not sure exactly where he's going with it. I don't really see a plan. We've played 4-5-1 in every game except for this one where we played 4-4-2. There hasn't been massive amounts of experimentation, and the results aren't great. So I'm not really sure where the positives are, although the Italy game away at Craven Cottage was decent. But the other night I was very disappointed. Maybe it was because I was up so late and I was in a bad mood, but that was it.
Yeah. I just say, Dave, I think, you know, he may be only formulating the plan. He may not have the master plan in place yet that Neil is looking for. The Whelan-Green partnership, I see what Neil is saying there about them being very similar type of players. there may come a game at some point where we are going to put two stoppers in there. Whether it happens to be Green and Whelan or not, I'm not too sure. I would also say that, you know, that the moving McLean to left back was a desperation issue, and that, you know, that probably there's no way that you would play a player of his type of player would never be a fullback. And he just doesn't have the overall discipline in his play. You know, apart from being a fantastic athlete, he's got the speed, you know, no winger should be able to run around him, but he's just not taking, you know, he wouldn't start his runs in the right place or anything like that. But so I would hold, the Portuguese will offer a much different obstacle and a much different challenge, because they'll tend to hold the ball a bit more. They'll probably be a bit circumspect here, because there's going to be a situation, there's going to be a certain amount of the Portuguese guys not wanting to get injured. But they will probably hold the ball and try and hold it, and Ireland will have to go at them. So it'll be interesting. I think he's tried quite a number of players. It's great to see young Duffy getting in there, a lad who, you know, whose whole career and life was threatened, you know, from a freak thing a couple of years ago.
He was very solid, Pete, as well. Himself and Richie Keogh in there. Richie Keogh seemed to put his FA Cup misery behind him. And as you said, Shane, I think the tallest ever centre half we've ever had, I think, as far as I can see. And, you know, if from a set piece point of view, when we're attacking, he could be a good bonus there. But there is positives. But Neil's negativity, you can understand it, Pete, in the sense that when we were watching the team against Italy and we got to see the likes of Jeff Hendrick and David Myler, much more kind of dynamic, I suppose you could say, in midfield. And it was great to see us actually attack from a central area, whereas against Costa Rica, as Neil was saying, they had the ball all the time.
Yeah, I can see it. But if we went out with Hendrick and Myler against Costa Rica, I know they did well against Italy. He learned a lot from that. You would have had people saying, well, geez, we should have had a look at Green and Whelan maybe, or some other two partnerships. He's got to try. I think he did commit to the players that, you know, everybody's going to get game time on this. So whereas from a rankings point of view, and I'm sure O'Neill was disappointed. He hates losing. And I know we didn't lose, but he, you know, it was almost like a loss to lose the 2 points, say, if it was, you know, the, rather than, you know, come away with a draw. So I think, you know, it's hard to say, you know, it's the end of season as well. And I think we'll play better against Portugal than we did against Costa Rica. I'll think you'll see something like we did against Italy. I think we always do better against the teams that, you know, have a name and a ranking. We've done that over the years.
Our players know their players and they know who they are.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that we just have a thing that we kind of almost have the underdog mentality. It might be in the psyche to a certain extent and we can't get rid of it. And it would have been the thing that that Keane as a player would have railed against, you know, that, you know, why should we feel in any way inferior to these guys? And I don't think they do feel inferior, but there's a certain amount. If we're playing the Germans, we know we have to get after them. If we're playing the Italians, we know we have to get after them. And I think, you know, we probably thought we were better than Costa Rica when we started, you know, that type of thing. We probably think the Portuguese are a bit better, so we'd have to get after them. And I think that's probably what happened.
Okay, Neil, to come to yourself on Portugal, it's going to be a different challenge again. As Pete was saying, maybe a lot of the Portuguese, they're going to be kind of watching themselves, but he predicts they'll still kind of keep the ball. But if we have this underdog attitude that Roy Keane hates when we have, we'll have to get at them, and it might actually boost us and spur us on. But more importantly, what kind of team do you think we're going to see against Portugal?
I haven't got a clue. I'm not going to even guess Martin O'Neill's teams, because he played Wilson and Whelan against Turkey, and then he played Green and Whelan against Costa Rica. So I hope he doesn't go down that road of playing two really defensive midfielders. I'd like to see a midfield again of Myler. I'd like to see possibly Hendrick in there with Whelan, and I'd like to see Shane Long tried out in the wing with maybe Robbie Keane and Pilkington on the other wing, or Robbie Keane up front, see how that works, and maybe even try a 3-5-2 either as well. I do think see, the game against Costa Rica was the one we needed to win, because that's the one where we have a really good chance of winning. This game's a tough game. It depends what Portugal are going to play. It's very close to the World Cup, so it's hard to know. They'll probably play the the second team because they won't want to get any injuries. But you never know. They're probably a week away, I think, from their starting game in the World Cup, because I think they're one of the later groups. So I'd like to see Wes Hoolan and Robbie Keane and Shane Long start and see can they work as a three and throw in either McGeady and Pilkington around them. And definitely I'd like to see Jeff Hendrick again, because I think he's a quality player. He showed against Italy that he has really good attributes. He showed in the playoff final that he can play in a big occasion. I thought Derby County were very unlucky that day, and they were especially unlucky to lose, and I felt sorry for himself not going through. So it'll be interesting who plays right back. Seamus Coleman, obviously, won't be playing, so it'll be interesting to see who plays right back. I think Ward is being brought back in to play left back. Again, that's another situation. I think Martin O'Neill has mismanaged. We're no closer to really finding a solution at the left back slot. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. I'm sorry for being pessimistic, but I do think we have the players to be doing a lot better than we are at the moment. And what we can't be doing is playing Green and Whelan together, or even Wilson and Whelan together, or Wilson and Green together. These playing two stoppers who don't really get on the ball and keep the football. Because if you give away the football time and time again, you're just inviting pressure on yourself, even if you're playing a team like Costa Rica.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Maybe as negative as it is. Pete, what kind of game do you think we're going to get? Is it going to be a nil-nil stalemate like England against Honduras the other night? Or are we going to see a 5-3 thriller like Italy against Fluminense, which really was a remarkable game? I think the first one is probably more accurate.
Mm-hmm. I'd be astonished if we see 8 goals in it. But I think that I think the Irish guys will go out there fired up, regardless of what team he picks. And I would agree with Neil that I would like to see us having at least not pick two stoppers in the middle of the pitch. And I really don't care which guys he puts in there, as long as we get guys onto the field who can do it. I think Ward will play left back, because he's not going to bring him all the way out there and not play him. He might give Kelly another run at right back. He's played very little football. Fine athlete, was on the verge of the big time a few years ago, and then just lost his way at Spurs. He's a fine player, but he seems to be in the doldrums at the moment. Interesting to see what he does at centre back. I'm not too sure. I think Wilson is finished for this tour. I think Wilson, I think, may end up being the left back when we get to the.
I was thinking that myself, Pete, because in the first half against Costa Rica, I think he did really, really well, and he in fact was kind of cutting inside and actually helping Green and Whelan out. And you know, I think he definitely offers consistency in that position, if anything.
Well, he did well. Yeah, he did well again in the Trapattoni era. He did well. You know, I'm assuming, you know, when the qualifiers come, that Dunn and O'Shea will be the centre backs. Clark is probably sniffing around in there. He might be the real backup. But I think Delaney, to be honest with you, I think his time is gone. I don't think he's played enough at the higher levels. It might be a bit harsh. I wouldn't mind seeing Long and Keane and Houlihan together. I mean, you've got three knacky little players. You know, Long is deceptively quick. He really is. But I think that, you know, if we're going to get goals, you know, Robbie, I know he missed a penalty. It's only the second penalty he's missed in his entire career the other night. He's going to be the one. And Houlihan can unlock the defences. But, you know, we need that solidness. We can't be conceding goals either. So I'm looking forward to it. I think Portugal will probably be a bit circumspect. We might see Ronaldo for a short space of time, because they just want to, you know, actually give him a little bit of a run out. But then some Portuguese guys might be looking to stake a claim, but I'd say they know exactly who's playing where now for Portugal at this stage before they go to the first game. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Ireland win it 1-0, to be honest.
Okay, and staying up late, as Neil was saying, it does tend to make you a little bit more cranky with the performance I found myself getting like that against Costa Rica anyway. Just before we go, lads, before we talk next week, I have to ask you, we have the small matter of the World Cup coming up. Neil, kicking off with Brazil taking on Croatia, a mighty game, all the pressure on Brazil. They very rarely lose at home, but this is a World Cup. This is the grandest stage of them all. Between now and next week, do you think we're going to have any, will there be any shocks in the World Cup? Do you think anything's going to happen that we might not see coming? Of course, you have some cracking games in there. As I said, Brazil, Croatia, Spain, Netherlands, England, Italy. What a belter that is. No doubt you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't wait. I was just saying earlier, when, this time in 1990, I was excited. I was 12 years old and I couldn't wait. And the excitement, I think it was the greatest time in the history of the country when we were all getting ready for Italia 90. And what a month of football and partying that was. But I think the biggest shock of the tournament has already happened. And that's that England aren't talking themselves up. They're actually talking themselves down. And it's probably one of the skills of Roy Hodgson's management that he's managed to down play expectations, and it's worked. And for the first time I can remember, England are not going into a World Cup or a European Championships thinking that they have a great chance to get into the semi-finals. At least they're talking about quarterfinals at best. And actually they have a decent team of footballers, whether Hodgson lets them play and lets them off their leash the same way that Trapattoni never really let our players off the leash. It'll be interesting to see that. They'll probably get a draw. I think if you're putting money on, I think Italy against England has all the hallmarks of being a draw. Italians, I know, start slow. England will take a draw now. I know Hodgson, I can see he's going to pick someone like Henderson and Welbeck with a view to getting a draw. But I can't wait. I think Holland against Spain on Friday night should be a cracker.
A repeat of the last final where Holland tried to kick the legs off the Spanish.
Yeah, it was a bad state of affairs. You know, you're in trouble when Johan Cruyff is shouting against his own country and he's shouting for Spain. Because Holland were so played against their, the ideals of their coaching academies.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it was the first time I've ever really shouted against Holland in that regard because they were just a disgrace that night. But they got to the World Cup final, and I suppose we got to a World Cup quarterfinal in 1990 kicking a few legs, so we can hardly complain. I can't wait. The World Cup is brilliant, and I think that should be a great game Friday night. It's just a pity it clashes with Bohemians away to Bray. So I might have to tape it, and I think a lot of League of Ireland fans are going to miss that game. But I think we'll all be tuning in Saturday night, Italy against England, for a bit of soap opera, Coronation Street, EastEnders, whatever you call it.
All rolled into one. Love it. Pete Kelly, quickly, what are you looking forward to in this World Cup? And do you think there's going to be any major shocks?
I don't think so. I mean, if you look back in the history of the World Cup, there isn't any, and not in real terms. And, it's interesting. I always go with a rule of thumb that Brazil always have the best chance when the tournament starts because they've won it five times. They have the best players when it comes to that kind of stage. They're performers. They're magical. And the team that beats the Germans normally has a great chance of winning it, if any, beat the Germans. Interesting games coming up. I think England will... I like the way that they're not getting talked up by their media, but I think they're still struggling to get out of the group.
They're well odds on not to get out of the group. I mean, I think Italy and Uruguay favourites to get out.
I think they're in trouble. And the reason why I think so is, and I think they will play defensively, and the reason why is that if they are let off the leash, as Neil said, like the traps you're doing with our guys, they'll be exposed left, right and centre at the back on the break. So I think they're in a difficult situation, but I think they'll probably stand up manfully better than they've done in the past. The thing about the Dutch, I'd just like to take up Leah's point about the Dutch and Cruyff denouncing his own, who was it in the midfield? The Van Bommel, was it, that was going around exterminating everybody? But I remember the Dutch teams very well. Neil wouldn't remember if he was only 10 years of age in 1990, with the team that Cruyff played on. And they had five or six genuine hard men in those teams. And the Dutch never took any prisoners when it came to tackles. They had guys like Neeskens and Rudy Kroll and people like that. And they were absolute. They could really play. but they were hatchet men as well when they needed to. So it was a bit disingenuous of Cruyff, even though he was the absolute aristocrat of players. So the Dutch are probably, the Dutch and the Spanish, even they play each other in the first game. I think they're both destined to be nearly men. So I think it would be amazing if the Brazilians were to win it for a sixth time in their own country. Whether they do or not remains to be seen. I think it's quite open, actually. A lot of people tipping Argentina. I don't think they have any chance. Messi just doesn't seem to play the same way for them, because they haven't to see the team set up to use them the best way they can, like Barcelona have. And I don't think they have 11 world-class players, whereas the Brazilians probably have.
You haven't mentioned the team with the most strength in depth, Pete, Spain. They're hardly going to go Euros, World Cup, Euros,
I don't
World
think so. Cup.
Not four in a row. Surely not.
I think they'll buckle. You know, they have, but a lot of the guys are getting old. You know, when I say old, not really maybe in terms of age, actual man years, as they say, that much, but their legs have an awful lot of mileage on it. So difficult to see. A team actually that I think out of left field, and I meant to mention them earlier on, and when you said Spain, Belgium will cause a lot of trouble. They've got 6 or 7 absolutely outstanding players, and I'll bet you the other guys that we don't know so well are not that bad either.
I don't think they are too bad either. It's going to be exciting stuff. When we're on the show next week, we'll have a couple, almost a full round of games completed by that stage. Anyway, from an Irish point of view, hopefully the boys in green do it against Portugal. 1 a.m. kickoff on Setanta Sports. So get watching it if you want to stay up late. Should be a cracking game. Well, we're hoping it'll be a cracking game with a positive Irish result. My thanks to all our guests tonight on the Why Big Football Show. From myself, Dave O'Grady, enjoy the kickoff to the World Cup. Enjoy the Ireland matches and the friendlies. We'll do it all again next week. Thanks, lads.